Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey Tommy, did you know that they closed Loveland Pass because of snow this weekend?
What is Loveland Pass?
Loveland Pass is the way that they used to go over the mountains before I-70 had the Eisenhower Tunnel. And so now it's also the way that trucks with hazardous chemicals have to cross ahead of the Eisenhower Tunnel so that they don't blow up in the tunnel and kill everybody.
Okay, so it sounds like winter is officially here if they're closing down a mountain pass.
Yeah, and there's two ski areas that are open already. Keystone opened up this past weekend, and Arapaho Basin, which is on the other side of Loveland Pass, also opened up. So we are heading into full-on winter here in the northern hemisphere, and so we thought it'd be fun to do what, Tommy?
We thought it would be fun to talk about the affordable all-wheel drive vehicles on the market today and how you can, you know, buy a little bit of safety and security for not a huge amount of money.
Yeah, with a caveat, of course, that a lot of these are unobtainium, but they'll come back. So while perhaps you can't go and buy one right now, if you hang out a few months, I'm sure that the supply chain issues will mitigate and you'll be able to go get these cars, or you can get them. Actually, we bought a pretty inexpensive little runabout for your grandma just because we were able to get it at Sticker, believe it or not. But that's a whole different podcast.
Okay, so should we dive right into it?
Nope, we're not going to dive right into it.
Oh, we're not?
No, we're going to talk about the vehicles that we have at the office, and we're going to do a quick 5-minute review of each of them. And this week has been electric car week here at the office. And if you're into electric cars, check out TFL Car on YouTube, where we did a little drag racing with four cool electric cars. We drag raced the Mini SE versus the ID4 all-wheel drive versus the new GT Performance Mach-E Mustang, of course. I say that with air quotes. And the Taycan Cross Turismo.
So I have a question for you. Why do you keep saying Mustang with air quotes when referencing the Mach-E?
Because it's not a Mustang. A Mustang to me, you know, first and foremost has to like roar and have, you know, big old two-wheel drive V8 power, and this has four-wheel drive electric power.
Sounds like a very boomer definition of a Mustang
I'm just saying, you call it anything else but a Mustang. Well, hold on. Before you say boomer, what is your dream car?
Well, it depends on the day of the week.
Come on. You want like a 64 or 65 Mustang?
I do. I do really like the old Mustangs.
And
I agree.
How many batteries were in that thing?
One. Exactly. Probably lead acid. But I think it's important to remember that in the 21st century, maybe the definition of Mustang has changed. Maybe it can be a family hauling full electric crossover.
How many doors were in that thing?
Once again, the number of doors doesn't matter. I think what made the Mustang cool is it was affordable performance available to the masses, and maybe that's what the Mach-E is doing right now. It's bringing affordable electric performance to a wide number of people.
Lee Iacocca is cringing in his grave.
Lee Iacocca, if it's making money, Lee Iacocca is happy.
Is he alive?
No, I think he passed away.
Did he pass away? I don't mean to disparage Lee Iacocca.
Yeah, I think he passed away. But I think Lee Iacocca would be happy about anything that makes money. So I would say if Mach-E is selling a lot of units, then more power to them, because it's cool. I mean, it's like you could either buy something such as a Ford Escape or a Ford Edge, but why not get something that's sporty, that's going to be quick, that's, you know, got an unbridled mode? That's pretty exciting.
Anyway, in that video, we did stumble across something that was weird and strange, and that is According to Ford, the Mach-E Performance GT is supposed to do 0 to 60 in about 3.5 seconds. And the final race was, of course, the base Taycan Cross Turismo. When I say base, I mean not the two-wheel drive, but the base four-wheel drive. So if you're not in the Porsche world, it goes Taycan 4, Taycan 4S, Taycan Turbo, Taycan Turbo S. So this was $105 as tested. $1,000 was a base unit. If we had the all-out Turbo S, it would have been a much more interesting race, but we didn't. We were lucky enough that one of our viewers actually brought the Mustang because Ford, for some reason, forgot our invite to the GT program. What we found out that was interesting when we did this race, and the way that we do the race is we're trying to have fun and be informative, right? So the fun part is drag racing, but the informative part is we set up the solo DL and we get 0 to 60 times. And unlike regular combustion engine cars, electric cars are actually not affected by being at a mile above sea level. So it makes for interesting reviews because all of you guys can also then, in a way, understand that what we're getting here is the same that you'll be getting at sea level. In fact, we might be getting quicker times if a golf ball travels farther up here. Anyway, what we found out was that after doing multiple runs, 0 to 60 runs, the Mustang actually slowed down substantially.
So what we thought was interesting is we have this GPS performance timer called a Solo DL, and we were kind of moving it between cars as we would race them against their own little brackets. And the final bracket was Taycan versus Mustang, and I had the Solo DL in the Porsche. I got a 4.85 0 to 60 in that race, which the Mustang won by a large margin. And then finally, the culmination of the video was to put our equipment, our 0 to 60 testing equipment, in the Ford, and then do one final run and get that 3.5. But that didn't happen. We were getting actually well above 4.85, which is what the Porsche was getting. So I think that, you know, there's a lot that could be going on here, but maybe the Ford was starting to derate itself a little bit for longevity, and maybe that's why we didn't see the times that we were supposed to be seeing. So we're gonna have to get another one back and do a lot more thorough testing to see if we can get that number.
So I was driving the Mustang because, once again, it was one of our viewers who brought it, so thank you very much. And we don't want to push the car if it's not ours or if it's not the manufacturer's, right? It was a brand-new Mustang Mach-E, and so we didn't want to, like...
Well, hold up. When you say push the car, we were going as fast as we could. I mean, we weren't holding back on the throttle. You were in engaged or unbridled mode, seeing how quick you could go. You weren't, like, sandbagging it, right? You were going all the way to the floor.
No, what I mean by push the car, in my head, what I wanted to do was do 10 0 to 60 times in a row, Taycan versus Mach-E. That's what I mean by push the car. If this has been our car or manufacturer car, right after that video was done, I would have said, okay, let's go and do 10 0 to 60s in a row, one after another, and see what the time is on each of those and see if it actually decreases from the first one to the 10th one. Because one of the things that Porsche says is their times do not decrease. Anyway, so I wanted to put that to the test, but because the Mach-E wasn't ours, I felt that was pushing it. So yeah, we were not, like, you know, we weren't babying it. I mean, I was flooring it all the way, but really what I wanted to do was do that test. And once again, because it wasn't ours or manufacturers, I felt that would have been detrimental potentially to the Mach-E that didn't belong to us. So
the Taycan we had was called the Cross Turismo, which is the station wagon. Mm-hmm. Did you know all Cross Turismos have all-wheel drive?
Yes.
As standard?
Yes.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
I really enjoy that. I thought that was really smart. So
anyway, so let's talk about the times, because it was a substantial drop, right? So let's say the first, you know, going by my butt time, because I didn't have a solo in the Mach-E, I would say it was under 4 seconds, because it did beat the Taycan handily. Mm-hmm. But then the next one, if I remember right, the next 0 to 60 I did was like in the 5-second range, which is a substantial drop off.
Right. Especially after, you know, what was essentially 2 acceleration runs.
And then I switched it I switched it to unbridled. And then the third one was in the 6-second range, so it dropped off another second. So now I went from what Ford is claiming is a 3.5 to a 6-second car. And people saw that, of course, in the video. And in the comments, they were like, what the heck? And I felt the same way. And that's why I wanted to do the 10 in a row, but couldn't.
Okay, well, we'll have to get another Mustang Mach-E. Maybe we'll either buy one or get one from Ford to test.
We're not buying one. We don't have. We can just buy one for a test.
Why not? You want to buy a Hummer. Why not a Mach-E?
Yeah, but that's a whole different ball of wax.
Not really. They're both electric sports vehicles. One's just a little bigger.
All right. Anyway, if you have one out there, and the problem is by the time we get our hands on one, we won't have a Taycan, and then we got to buy a Taycan, and then we're really
blowing the budget. Well, why not? Let's buy a Taycan.
I'm going to buy a Taycan too. Huh? So just really blow the budget for one single test.
Yep. I think that's worth it.
Anyway, what do you think of the Taycan? Let's do a quick 5-minute review.
I thought it was phenomenal. I think that the Taycan is probably the best car I've ever driven, and I do not mean that over-exaggerating. I think that it is the best car in terms of its bandwidth. It's an incredible cruiser, super quiet. The interior is beautiful, incredibly well-made. It's plenty quick, even in the base for Cross Turismo version. The Cross Turismo, the wagon, has enough room to carry stuff and people, and it's just like one of the most phenomenal, well-assembled, well-developed automobiles I've ever driven.
Yeah, now, for those of you who aren't familiar with the Taycan, it's been Porsche's first electric car. It came out as a sedan. Now they've done this Cross Turismo, which I think is just incredibly sexy with that taller back end. It just works. And it's got an official range of like, what, 220-ish? But we're seeing more like 250-ish in our week with the vehicle. And it also has air suspension. So you took it off-road. How was it off-road?
I did, yeah. So believe it or not, it's an inch higher than the standard Taycan sedan, essentially. And it goes up to about 8 inches, which isn't far off a Subaru. And it's really surprisingly good off-road. In fact, they did a trip recently with Porsche where they took this exact car and put it on off-road tires. And you'll be amazed where this $105,000 electric Porsche sports car can go, because it's... really is a very capable machine. So that was a ton of fun. But I do genuinely mean, it's a huge amount of money, $105,000, and I can never dream about affording one. But if you maybe want to find one on the used market in a couple of years, if you just have the opportunity to drive a Taycan, definitely do it, because it will blow your mind. And it's no wonder that it's selling so well for Porsche. It really has been a big, big success for them.
And speaking of taking it off-road, we have to give a big shout-out to our sponsor, Onyx Off-Road. If you guys are out there off-roading your Taycans, and hope you are, check out Onyx Off-Road. The way that it works is basically you download the map of where you're going to your phone, and then whether you're in service or out of service, you'll always have trail markings. It's got, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of miles at this point of trails. I think if you use a code TFL, you get 20% off.
Very cool.
Cool car. My only criticism in addition to that would be, I think the infotainment's a little fussy. Like this morning, I accidentally uploaded my whole phone book to the car, and these are loaner cars, and I really don't want to return a car to the next journalist with my phone book in it. Not that there's anything that pressing in it, but nevertheless, you know, your home phone number, Tommy, probably is not great to have in a car. I tried to figure out how to delete the phone book and how to delete my phone. I couldn't do it. I gave up. After like 15 minutes, I gave up. I had to have Zach do it. And he finally, you know how he figured it out?
Yeah, you push the three little dots, right?
No, that doesn't work. Well, no. He had to Google it, actually.
Okay.
So what you do is you do in the thing, in the you know, infotainment screen, you do basically...
It doesn't matter that much.
But there's no like delete, right? It shows you the two phones that are hooked up, and it shows you whether they're Bluetooth, whether it's got Apple CarPlay, but there's no way to delete. So how do you think you delete it?
You click the three little dots.
And no, that's how you get to that screen, by clicking through that.
To be honest, Dad, I'm not sure.
There's no delete button. You got to swipe.
There you go. Okay.
But there's nothing that says
swipe.
It's
like an iPhone. You just go, whoop, swipe to delete.
But there's nothing that says. There's no clue, like, you got to swipe. So Zach had to Google it. So it took us like a half hour to figure out how to delete. Anyway, it's fussy. It's fussy. All right. So let's move on to the next one. That was quick 5 minutes. The other car we had in the office was the Volkswagen ID.4. And this time we had the all-wheel drive, which is good for winter cars. It's not affordable, unfortunately. Do you remember the sticker on that thing?
It's, I think this one was about $51,804.
So what do you think of the ID.4?
I think that the ID.4 as a vehicle is a pretty phenomenal thing to drive. I really like the chassis. I love the interior design. I think that the powertrain is super sorted. So this is the all-wheel drive. We had, the Pro S.
Yeah.
So it's got a motor in the rear. It's got a motor in the front. The motor in the front is 107 horsepower. Combined output, about 300. This little thing hauls butt. You know, it's really is a pretty quick vehicle, especially at altitude. I think it would give any GTI a run for its money. If you want to talk about fussy, though, the infotainment system would prevent me from buying the car because I found it to be incredibly laggy. I personally don't think that it's all that intuitive. I know a lot of people enjoy it. I really hate the touch-sensitive controls below that, for example, like the temperature sliders. And everything in this car is piano black for touch points.
You know, it wasn't all that long ago, like 5 years ago, that Cadillac came out with Q, right? Their haptic touch interface system, and everybody hated it. I mean, everybody hated it with a passion. And here we are 5 years later, and everybody's copying them in terms of the manufacturers. It's like they don't learn anything, right? It's like haptic is the way to go. It doesn't work when you're in a moving car, right? It's hard to hit something because you're always hitting bumps or steering or something. And yet, all the manufacturers are going to it. And you're right. In the Volkswagen, it's probably one of the worst executions of that. I find infotainment to be extremely important in a car. Once upon a time, you know, a car was based on how well it accelerated, on how well it turned, on how well it rode, on how comfortable it was, what size it is. Now, probably all of that is below the infotainment, and Volkswagen just is not nailing it with this one. And you're right. It's a shame because it's a really good car, but it would also keep me from buying it, unfortunately.
I think the interior design is phenomenal. I really like the seats. I find that it's got a good amount of room. I think the range is plenty adequate. The charging is pretty darn good. I think it needs to have plug and charge like the Mustang Mach-E. Electrify America is a, you know, more or less related to the Volkswagen family. And it's funny to me that Ford has plug and charge, but Volkswagen does not. Don't really understand that. But the all-wheel drive one is significantly better than the rear-wheel drive one. I really enjoy the way it drives. I like the pep to it, and strongly recommend it if you're looking for this kind of small, mid-sizey crossover electric vehicle.
And let's kind of dive deep. I mean, yeah, it's easy to say, well, I wouldn't buy it because, but let's define what we mean by it being problematic. So there's a couple of different criteria you can use. First, there's kind of how quick it is, right? If it's laggy or not. How long does it take from the time you touch the button to the time you get to where you're supposed to be going? And that's one of the issues. It feels like the code is getting in the way of the processor. Then there's kind of the jumpiness of it. You know, is it flowing? Is it easy to, does it gracefully go from one screen to another? These are just kind of the aesthetics of it, right? Then of course, there's the most important one. How intuitive is it? How easily can you figure out, for instance, to turn on your heated seat when there's no real button for it?
I think it is pretty intuitive. From an intuitive standpoint, I think it's pretty good. It's the other user experience involved with the touch
jumpy screen. The laggy.
Right, it's just a real bummer. I also think there's some silly stuff like the reinvention of the rear window controls, and that it only has front window controls, and you have to click a button that says rear to lower the back windows. Although apparently you can push and hold that rear button and all four of them go down, but it's just like, give me four window switches. It's a four-seater car with four windows. Why do I have to engage a separate mode to put down the back windows?
Yeah, Volkswagen certainly has enough money to put four window switches instead of two in the car. It just seems like, but let's get beyond that part of it. I also kind of feel like, in a way, the design is a little, like Volkswagen's channeling their inner Toyota Camry, right? I think they could have gone and made it a little bit more futuristic. I do like the lighting pattern that is across the front where that light lines up, that there's that kind of that long diagonal, actually horizontal line that lights up and then illuminates the Volkswagen logo. But beyond that, it's just kind of a box with, you know, a cool light on it.
I think it's not so bad.
It's not bad. It's clean. It does have Volkswagen's kind of design language, but I wouldn't look twice at it if I saw it parked at the local grocery store. Or if I had it, it certainly wouldn't be a car where I would like shut the door, walk away, and then turn around and admire it. It's just not that kind of a vehicle. Like I said, I feel like they're kind of channeling their inner Camry.
It's hard to express how important Volkswagen thinks this car is for their success in America. And they really do think that this is going to be kind of the future of the brand. So, they really did put a lot of money into developing it, and it does feel special. It's just, it's got some kind of fussiness that detracts from the driving experience, which is otherwise very good. So ID4 is an excellent car. I just wish that the infotainment was a little bit more user-friendly or a little bit quicker to respond, I should say, to inputs.
I kind of feel like what they did was they said, okay, we're going to make it electric, which makes it unique. And they're right about that, right? And then we're going to put some kind of, you know, funky design language on the interior. We're going to, you know, put the play and the pause button on the brakes. But there's more to like good design than kind of that. It's got to be more of a holistic And, you know, the thing about electric cars, Tommy, I think, is it allows a manufacturer to completely rethink what a car could be or what a car should be, right? You can get rid of the entire grill because you don't need that big radiator because you're not cooling an engine. So I kind of wish they had just gone and rethought it, right? And you know, we can have this conversation with you guys and with us, but why not a frunk? Why didn't they bother to put in a frunk? It's one of the cool, you know, features of an electric car. You can have storage in the front and in the back, and yet this doesn't have it. And, well, and a lot of the Germans, it's not just Volkswagen, right? I mean, Mercedes now and BMW don't even allow you to open the front anymore.
Yeah, but I think...
I mean, that's rethinking the design the wrong way.
Do you really need a front trunk, though?
Yeah.
You really don't need a front trunk.
Yeah.
That I have to say, in the, what, 3-4 years that we've had our three Teslas, I think I've seen you use a front trunk maybe once. Never once did we go to a grocery store and you actually put the groceries in the front trunk. You always use
that's
the
because
back.
Because the Tesla has this incredibly deep...
Volkswagen has it too?
In
Volkswagen
the back has... where you could throw your stuff. But I have... Like yesterday, I used the trunk.
What?
For the vacuum I bought for the office.
Weren't you in the 911?
Yeah, but I used the frunk.
Because there's no rear trunk. Of course you're going to use the frunk. That's a silly argument. I agree with Volkswagen on this. People give it heck, and I actually gave it heck in the past for not having a frunk, and now I do not care because I realize that all this time driving electric cars, I never, ever, ever open the front. Like I was just driving the EQS, same thing. It doesn't let you open the hood. And there's no reason to. Why do you need a front trunk?
All right. Well, I disagree.
The trunk is huge. Have you seen how big the trunk is?
I disagree, Tommy. I'm like, good engineer, and give me as much storage space because the one time you need it, you won't have it, right? The one time you're going to go cross country with two other friends and that extra bag does not fit in the back, you're going to want the frunk, and all of a sudden you'll be like, uh-oh, no frunk.
That trunk is enormous, Dad. I can almost guarantee whatever you want to put back
there. No, I'm saying you go for four people, you put all their stuff in it, or go to the airport, you're going to need the frunk.
But the front trunk on like the Taycan is so small.
What
are you going to put in the front trunk of the Taycan?
The argument for not having a spare tire, which is grand until you need a spare tire.
No, like, that's not true.
99.9% of the time you don't need a spare tire, but that one time you do.
The spare tire is completely ridiculous. You need a spare tire. Not having a separate little cubby in the front.
Hummer EV doesn't have a spare tire.
What?
Hummer EV doesn't have a spare tire.
That's a massive problem. That is unforgivable.
For an off-roader, you're not okay with that.
I'm not okay with that. No, I can deal with not having a place to put my charging cable.
All I'm saying is basically what you have, let's talk about like the skateboard, right, which is what an electric car is. So you've got a skateboard, which is, you know, two wheels. If you've got all-wheel drive, two relatively small motors in comparison to an engine, right, in combustion convention engine, and then underneath a bunch of batteries. So I understand. I was talking to the GM guys, and I said, you know, how hard was it to put in a frunk in the EV? And they said it was actually harder than you think. I was talking to the chief engineer,
sure.
Al, and he said, you know, what happens is all these other engineers, and there's a lot of other things that you need in a vehicle. Like all these other engineers say, I need this for whatever, right, for some other functionality of the car. And quickly, the easiest place to put that is under the hood. And he said, if I wasn't watching it, the next thing I knew is I wouldn't have had a frunk. It would have all gone away. But the Hummer EV needed a frunk because they had to put those glass panels that are in the roof someplace, right? So they didn't want to not put them someplace. You couldn't put them in the bed of the truck. So that's what the frunk was used for. So he was like, yeah, the engineers were like quickly eating up that space. I'm just saying, if you're a good engineer, you'll package it in such a way that you will create as much usable storage for the owner of the car. And I don't buy this like, hey, you know, you don't need it or only use it one time out of 10 or some other stuff. Good engineering allows for as much storage and as much utility as possible. I'm just going with that.
All right.
And you know, like the BMW where you can't even open the hood, right?
Yeah.
That's crazy, dude.
Why?
Because
then what are you going to service on your BMW iX under the hood?
The last vehicles where you couldn't even open like the hood, right, is a McLaren where you have to go and actually go to the McLaren dealership. And that to me is just, you know, going down the road of the right not to repair.
Okay.
Right? It just becomes the car.
You're telling me,
I'm leasing the car from BMW at this point.
You spend $120,000 on a BMW iX.
Yeah.
And you're going to want to go under there and do a coolant flush?
Yeah.
You know how many times I've seen you change an oil in a car? Never. I've never seen you change an oil because your argument is always like, and you know how to change an oil, but your argument is always like, I'd rather pay someone else to do it because it makes a big mess and where do I put it? And why would you want to go service your own electric car? What are you going to do? First of all, you have high voltage cables.
I'm just saying, why not put a frunk in there so I can put stuff into it? If once again, if Tesla can do it, you know, and let's face it, they're the leader in this, then, you know, BMW coming back and saying, not only will we not give you a frunk, but we won't even let you open it, is just, it's not a competitive advantage. If anything, in a very interesting marketplace, it's a competitive disadvantage. If I were your mom, right, let's say I'm just picking, or Joe car buyer, and I could buy two cars that directly compete in price, and one I could open the trunk and frunk and have extra storage space, I'd go for the one with more space. I'm just saying that that's a competitive advantage in most people's book.
I think that if you asked mom to open her hood in her car, she'd have no idea how to do it.
But it's a frunk. It's not a hood.
It's the same process.
It's storage
the same
space.
Idea. She would never think about using it.
All right.
I really do think that the whole front argument is kind of silly. And I also think, too, if you want to talk about right to repair, open up the hood of the ID4, everything you need to service right there. You don't have to
Because it's missing a frunk.
Yeah, but you don't have to remove another panel to get to the stuff you
and
need.
And you're right. Look, I'm not going to go into, like, if I see those orange cables, that just to me
right,
says,
yeah.
Do not come near me. I do not want to be messing with high voltage cables.
To your credit, there's not much to service on an EV anyway, so I personally don't think that it's a big deal.
All right. Well, we've kept them waiting long enough, Tommy. Let's go talk about some inexpensive four-wheel drives that you guys might be thinking about for the winter. Obviously, if you're places like Colorado, it's very important. If you're in places like Florida or maybe California, not so much. But nevertheless, even if it rains in your state, which it probably does, then having all-wheel drive or the security of it is a good thing to have. Or if you want to go, let's say, on a dirt road somewhere, or if you get caught in a mudslide, or, you know, one of those hurricanes you guys have in Florida, which sure cause all kinds of grievances, it's nice to have all four wheels driving the car. Wouldn't you agree?
I do agree, but I will say, if you are in the boat where you can either afford all-wheel drive or snow tires, skip the all-wheel drive and just buy the snow tires. Because an all-wheel drive on all seasons is no better off than a front-wheel drive on snow tires.
Yeah, because you got to stop.
You got to stop and turn, typically. So that's what gets you.
There's those three things to that, right? Going, turning, and stopping. And all-wheel drive doesn't help with the latter two.
Don't buy all-wheel drive as an excuse for not getting proper winter tires.
I noticed that you've got the good old Jeep Renegade up there. So let's start with that quite. It's been around a while. It's Jeep's, I would say, entry level. It might not be their entry level. The Patriot might be more entry level. But the Renegade is certainly...
Patriot?
Yeah.
What do you mean, Patriot?
What about it?
What are you, living in 2009? Patriot's been
Compass.
Dead for like...
Sorry, Compass.
Oh, the no, Compass is more expensive.
Is it really?
The yeah, Compass of is course.
More?
Yes.
The Compass is more than a Renegade?
Yeah, Compass is bigger.
Okay.
So Renegade is the...
I wonder if the Compass has actually less room than... Because the Renegade's got a lot of room, interior room, especially.
No, I think Compass is bigger in every dimension.
I'm not saying it's externally not bigger. I'm just saying internally.
I think it's bigger inside,
really?
Too.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, so we got the Renegade up there. So that's their entry level. How much does it start at?
It starts at $23,580, but of course there are front-wheel drive Renegades too, so you're going to want to spec the all-wheel drive model. And there's tons and tons of different trims. And we just started here to show you that, yes, you can still buy an affordable Jeep. Now, this is not, you know, Wrangler levels of capability.
No, it's kind of a Fiat.
Oh, this is interesting. So the Sport, the base model, is only available in 4x4. Isn't that sweet?
So for
wow,
$23,000, you get 4x4?
$24,985,
so
you get 25. Four-wheel drive.
Wow, we're going to get cheaper than that. That's not cheap.
Well, you'd be surprised. It's hard to get affordable all-wheel drive cars.
I can think of two others that... All right, anyway.
All right, what's
yeah.
next?
Let's talk about this. We've driven lots of Renegades. They're fine, you know. I mean, they're cute little runabouts. If you love the Jeep brand, and you probably are paying that Jeep tax, right? That's why it's $25,000, because you are paying extra for having the off-road worthiness, whether it has it or not. I'm sure the Trailhawk has it, but the base one probably isn't all that off-road worthy, as at least compared to a Wrangler. It's got a lot of character and a lot of style. It was jointly developed with the Fiat 500, so it's got a lot of European flair to it.
I do not like the 9-speed automatic. I don't think it's particularly good.
Yeah, they kind of didn't
and
get
I don't,
that right.
I don't really like the engine very much either. But you're right. If you do want something that's kind of boxy with a little bit of flair, the Renegade might be a good option.
I mean, the problem with a lot of these entry-level cars is there's a lot of cost-cutting. So, like, the interior is kind of a sea of black. A lot of, you know, relatively non-quality plastics.
Yeah, but they give you a lot of cool kind of, like, little quirky things. Like
yeah, they do. They give you a lot of
Easter
eggs
and the maps and the... You can get some funky fabrics, so you can break it up a little
bit. In the base one, it's going to be a sea of black with kind of big plasticky dials and very you know, very kind of basic seats, cloth seats. You're not going to wow anybody with it.
It does have, though, a terrain response, so you can kind of twist a knob to dial in the Renegade on whatever kind of terrain you're driving over.
Yeah, it kind of fakes it, though, right? It doesn't have a low range, so there's a button that says low range, but basically it locks it into, what, first gear or something like that?
I don't think any of the cars on our list are going to have a low range.
No, they won't. But I'm saying it fakes it with
terrain management. Sure, right. If you want a real capability, you have to get a Cherokee Trailhawk or like a Wrangler. So what's next on the list?
Let's go to the least expensive, I think, four-wheel drive in America, which used to be the Ford EcoSport.
EcoSport.
EcoSport, or do you say EcoSport?
I think it's EcoSport.
Well, either way, Eco or EcoSport. I think those start in the $18,000 range, but they may be more now.
Starting at $20,000, I think that we can go cheaper than this on all-wheel drive.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll try. So let's talk about the EcoSport, EcoSport, whichever way you prefer. It's a car that is definitely built to a budget and is built... I kind of feel like it's a car that was built for India because that's where it's built, and they decided to import it to America. Now, the good part about the car is that it is actually styled very nicely. I like the look of it. But that's where my like for this car kind of ends.
So $21,735 with all-wheel drive on the EcoSport. That's got the 2-liter four-cylinder. There's also a 1-liter EcoBoost if you want front-wheel drive, but because we're talking all-wheel drive, that's the one. This is probably one of the worst cars on sale today, and I would strongly recommend not buying it. I think quality is very low. I think that the interior is probably one of the worst interiors. No offense to any of our EcoSport listeners out there, but maybe used, it's a good car. Maybe it's a good car for students, but... Oh, it's kind of a nasty thing to look at and drive.
I actually like the look of it, Tommy.
You like the look of it?
I think it's okay. I think styling is its best quality. But if you did a list of the worst new cars, this would certainly be on my list. It does, you know, in terms of driving dynamics, it's underpowered. The braking isn't confidence inspiring. The interior is a sea of plastics. Especially if you get the base unit, you get the really tiniest of screens. I mean, it doesn't get much tinier than this thing. It's kind of, it feels like I said, it feels like they built it for a different country, brought it in here because they needed something to compete in that small all-wheel drive space, right?
I think that's exactly what they did. No, I think you're spot on. It's a car, I want to say they build them in Brazil or something.
No, I think they build them in India.
Really? Is it India?
I'm pretty sure it's India. You can Google it, but
yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I'll look it up. But you could be right.
Not there's anything wrong. I'm not trying to dis... You know, Tata is out of India. They build a lot of really great vehicles, including Land Rovers, but this is not one of them.
Originally built in Brazil by Ford of Brazil since 2003. At the Kamakari plant, the second generation concept was launched in 2012 and is also assembled in India, Thailand, Russia, and Romania.
There you go. So it's a world car.
Although you can get it with a spare tire on the back, which I think looks fantastic. So get the one with the spare tire on the back, and then it's a really good car.
Okay.
All right, let's move away from this little thing. What? All right. I think I can think of one cheaper.
All right, what's that one? The Subaru Impreza?
I think the Impreza might be the most affordable all-wheel drive vehicle you can buy. Let's see. 2022 Impreza. Let's check out the pricing on this puppy. Starting at $18,795, of course, with all-wheel drive standard. Boom.
Boom. I wouldn't get an Impreza. If you're going to go just, you know, take out the bigger loan and get the Crosstrek. The Impreza is basically a lowered Crosstrek. It's an economy car. The issue with all these cars is, I was thinking about this, Tommy, would I rather spend $20,000 for one of these new, or would I get something a lot more interesting that's a couple years old that I could spend the same money on? And the answer is, yeah, I would wait. Like, if you're going to get the Renegade, I would sooner get like a 5-year-old Wrangler. I'm just saying, for me personally, I think you're going to get the same amount of off-road on-road ability, and you're going to get a lot more off-road ability. And the problem with this car is, I guess if you're looking for basic all-wheel drive to get you to work that has a warranty, this is certainly one that is doable. But is there any joy in driving this? At least with the – so we had the Crosstrek, right, with the smaller engine. And let's face it, it was not the – especially up here at a mile above sea level, it was not the peppiest of vehicles to drive. But at least it looked cool. You know, the seats were comfortable. The interior was rather modern. It had a lot of utility. This to me is just screams like basic transportation.
So I think that the issue with your argument is what you just said. And the reason I would maybe consider getting a new car, even if it's not as exciting as a used one that's depreciated, is the warranty is such a big deal. Think about the number of people that just want their car to be covered for the next 3, 5, 7 years and don't want to have to deal with any of the repairs. So I think that is a huge argument for going new. And actually, if it was my money, I would get an Impreza over a Crosstrek. I don't really see the appeal of the Crosstrek over the Impreza. It's the same basic vehicle. You're going to save several $1,000s by getting an Impreza. It's probably going to drive better because it's lower to the ground. You can still get it with the manual transmission. Sure, you're probably going to...
The worst manual transmission.
It's a 5-speed.
It's a horrible... It's rubber. Works. Every, you know, people... So people are nostalgic now for manual transmissions, right? Because they're going away. There's so few of them left. But there were just as many horrible manual transmissions as there were good ones. You know, you said I was driving the 911, and this is an 87 911 that we bought earlier this year. And that, it's got the G50, and that is a joy to drive. I love driving that just for the manual. I mean, it is so satisfying. It's like man and machine is one, right? To feel that thing click into gear, to feel how mechanically pure and it's almost a religious experience driving that manual. This, on the other hand, which I've driven, is a horrible. It's, I mean, if you want to define rubbery and imprecise and slow and dimwitted and like you know, frustrating, this would be the transmission I would pick.
It's not a 911 transmission, but it's also an $18,000 car, and for that, I think the 5-speed is phenomenal. I would just, it's better than the CVT.
Have you driven it? There was, I went on the launch and that was the only car.
I know.
That was the only car where I would have actually recommended, but it was so bad that it was the only car where I would have recommended this one and the other one, the 500L. They both were such horrible manual transmissions that I would recommend the CVT over manual.
So I just drove a older Forester with the manual transmission. Grant has a 5-speed manual.
Right, but it's not that transmission.
I think it might be similar.
I don't think so.
Because I remember you hated that one too. It was the same rubbery 5-speed. And trust me, shifting your own gears is better than the CVT.
Not when it's like imprecise. Like, I'm not going to go through this
it
list
works.
Of adjectives.
It works.
I guess it works.
It's not like you're missing gears. It's not a 2CV transmission, Dad. Like, you can find all the gears quickly.
Look, a manual transmission can do one of two things, right? Actually, do three things, but could do one of two things from a driving perspective. It can make it engaging and fun to drive, or it could be like an unintuitive infotainment system where it gets in the way of driving, and that's what this 5-speed does.
So personally, I would definitely get the Impreza over the Crosstrek, in my opinion, because even though you get additional capability from the ground clearance in the Crosstrek, the base model still has the same 2.0 liter four-cylinder, and I don't think it's going to provide a lot of off-road capability anyway. So
can you even get it at the hatchback?
Yeah.
You can have it at the
Absolutely.
Hatchback.
That's the one to get. Yeah, so the cheapest one is a sedan. But the 5-door Impreza.
How much is the 5-door?
$19,000.
So $20,000.
Yeah. What a value. I really like this thing. I have friends that own these, and they just absolutely love them.
And the other thing with Subaru is it's a little tinny, if I'm being honest. It's a little...
It's a 19...
You shut that door, and it's like, ding!
It's an economy car for $19,000 with all-wheel drive.
Yeah,
what
it
are you
feels
expecting?
Like it.
It's a good car. I don't know why you're taking a dump on my Impreza. I think
because I like the Crosstrek, and you know, if I was driving an Impreza, every time I saw a Crosstrek, which would be about every 30 seconds here in Colorado, I'd be like, I bought the wrong car.
No, I'd look at that guy in the Crosstrek and be like, why are you sitting so high for capability
you're
not going to use?
I'd be like, I bought the wrong car.
Why are you sitting so high for capability you don't use? I'm getting better fuel economy and it drives better.
Oh, God.
Boom.
Boom.
Argument over.
No, there's this.
I win that one.
There's this argument between like your head and your heart, and my heart definitely wins this argument.
Your heart is saying, you know what I want? Some plastic cladding slapped on the side of my car.
My heart is saying I want the cool kid car, not the dorky kid
car. So you can add some plastic on the side of a car, give it an inch more ground
clearance,
and
it's cool? Yeah.
I'm not going to agree with you on that one.
It actually goes off-road, and it has cooler
wheels.
Goes
off-road.
Those wheels are horrible.
The base.
Those wheels look like the kind you go to like Advanced Auto or O'Reilly's
and buy
those
hubcaps off.
Buy those terrible hubcaps to stick on your, you know, ugly steelies. And the first time you hit a bump off road, they're going to fly off and run ahead of the car.
The Impreza starts, the Crosstrek starts at $22,000.
Yeah, it's worth every penny.
It's $4,000 more.
It's worth every penny more.
No, I disagree.
I would take out a loan. I would sell my, I don't know, whatever I have to sell just to go up to the Crosstrek.
I don't know what the resale value difference is. The Crosstrek will probably be a little better.
I would say, Tommy, I would say that that, like, this is one of those examples in the automotive world where you've got the same bones, but the two cars are very different.
Yep, and the Impreza is better.
Yeah, right.
No, genuinely. I mean, right, the Crosstrek is fine.
Let's not.
Also get the bigger engine in the Crosstrek if you want to spend a lot of money. But this is affordable all-wheel drive.
Let's not bicker. Let's go on to the next one, which is brand new right now. Of course, Toyota had the CHR, which was available as an all-wheel drive car in many places, but not here. For some reason, here in America, they only brought in the two-wheel drive, so they felt like in this entry-level crossover segment, they needed something to compete. So what did they create?
The 2022 Toyota Corolla Cross.
Yeah, Nathan went and drove it recently.
Yes, he sure did. And the Corolla Cross starts at $22,000, but of course that's 2-liter front-wheel drive. You have to go to 2-wheel drive, 2-liter all-wheel drive if you want that snow capability. That's going to bring you up to $23,495.
So now you're directly competing with the Crosstrek.
Right.
Right. So you're
price-wise.
Yeah, price-wise, you're directly in Crosstrek territory.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So what do you think of the Corolla Cross?
I think it's good. I think it's a Toyota, so it's probably going to last till the end of time. I think the design is really pretty special. I think they did a really nice job with the design. It's kind of an attractive little car. I'm pretty excited about the Corolla Cross.
Yeah, I am too. You know, I didn't get to drive it. Nathan was on the program. He came away impressed with it. You know, once again, you know, it's going to be basic transportation with not, you know, necessarily a lot of, like, flair to it. But as a new kid on the block, as the newest kid in the segment, I think it's a good little car, and I think they're going to do very well with it. Is it a CVT?
Yeah, it's a CVT. None of these cars are going to be very... very, you know, high performance. But keep this in mind, too. Both the Subaru and the Toyota have very decent safety tech, right?
Yeah.
Toyota crossed their line.
Yeah, kudos to all the Japanese and Asian car companies that are actually now including, with the case of Toyota, it's their latest safety sense, right, where
yep.
you get things like cross-traffic alert, autonomous braking, stuff that I think is incredibly important to keep people you love and yourself safe in the car. So thank you guys for doing that. Maybe it's competition and not good hardness of the manufacturer, but either way, it's definitely well worth the price of admission. So let's go to the Honda's entry-level car. In this case, it's the HR-V. What do you think of that little guy?
I like the HR-V. It's fine. It's getting a little long in the tooth, and I'm not a huge fan of the technology in it, but starts at about 21,000 and some change for the little HR-V. You know, not a very ruggedized vehicle, but certainly.
Is it 21 for the all-wheel drive or is it?
Probably front-wheel drive. Let's see what all-wheel drive starts at.
Yeah, but your all-wheel drive is probably going to be like the Corolla Cross.
And I don't think any of these prices include destination. Yeah, so you're going to be paying $22,900 for an all-wheel drive HR-V. Good-looking car, though. A little compromised on rear seat headroom because of the sloping rear roof line. And certainly not as maybe rugged as your Crosstrek that you love so much. But I do think that it's a very, very potent vehicle. It drives nice. It's got that Honda precision driving experience that you come to expect. And it's probably going to be pretty long-lived.
Yeah, I got to drive it around. I believe where was I at? I was somewhere on the East Coast. It was a fun little car, you know. I mean, once again, I think it's a CVT, right?
Yep.
If I recall right. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, because of cost cutting maybe or fuel economy reasons, all these cars have CVTs. So there is one car that's coming up on our list that doesn't. But I would personally, you said the Crosstrek, which I love so much. I love the Crosstrek as opposed to the Impreza. I don't love it as much to buy. I'll tell you the car that I would buy in a second out of this list, and you probably know what it is.
Yep, right behind me.
No, it's not the Kicks. not the Kicks.
So in the Nissan lineup, you can't buy a Kicks in all-wheel drive. So the Kicks is the front-wheel drive.
The Rogue Sport?
The Rogue Sport.
No, it's not that car either.
Rogue Sport, baby.
No, not the Rogue Sport. It's a fine look. These are all, look, this is like arguing, like, you know, what's the best flavor of vanilla? it's all kind of, is the vanilla bean? Is it, you know, is it like, you know... barrel-churned vanilla. It's all the same.
The Rogue Sport. Vanilla. Rogue Sport is kind of expensive. I think it's like $25,000-$26,000 with all-wheel drive.
Mm.
So I would probably avoid the Rogue Sport. It's also kind of a dreary thing to drive.
It's got a nice interior.
It does have a nice interior, yeah. Yep. And it does offer pretty decent tech. So those are two good things about it. But what was the one that you wanted to?
Okay, you haven't guessed?
No, what is it?
It's a Hyundai. What's a Hyundai?
The
Kona.
The Kona.
All-wheel drive. That's the one that I would buy in this group of cars. I think it's one of my favorite. And, of course, I forget what the Kia version of it is.
Oops, that's the Venue.
The Venue is only two-wheel drive. We just bought that for my mom.
The Kia version is a Seltos.
Yes. Remember we drove the Seltos. I thought out of all these, they're the ones, it's like the vanilla with the chocolate chips in it. It's the one that's got the most character. How much is a Kona all-wheel drive? I think it's going to be like 25K.
SE, 21 starting. Let's click the all-wheel drive bubble. I hate to say it, but I hate the nose on the new 22 Kona.
I think it's kind of cool. I think it looks.
It does not work for me.
It looks like a predator.
It looks like a catfish.
Did you ever see the movie Predator? Am I dating myself?
Yes, the movie Predator is what everyone thinks that the Lexus grills look like. That is not an attractive look, by the way.
I'm just saying.
The Ma. No, I do not like the new. I love the old Kona, but this refresh model kind of looks like a catfish.
How much
for 22,650
for the all-wheel drive.
Yep.
So it's not only a fun little car to drive, and I think. What makes it unique is it's got the, I think it's a 9-speed, if I remember right. Dual clutch, maybe? It's not a CVT.
It is a CVT.
Are you sure?
I think the base model is a CVT. Yeah, I want to say it is.
Let's find out. We'll do some digging.
I'm pretty sure, because I think you have to upgrade to the turbo if you want the dual clutch.
If you want the tool. So maybe I drove the turbo, of course, which was cool.
I drove the Kona 2.0, and I loved it. I really thought it was super, super good.
So what's the transmission?
Transmission. Oh, no, you're right. 6-speed auto.
Yeah, there it is. 6-speed auto. That's what it was. I knew it wasn't.
You're right. Yep. Very, very cool.
So there you go. That's why I love that vehicle, because you get away from the CVT, which makes, driving a car about as much fun as going to the dentist. Did you notice the drill reference there? Did you get that?
No, I was not paying attention. I apologize.
Our listeners and readers, whoever's out there reading this podcast / video, got it. All right, how about the Seltos? What do you think of the Seltos?
I think I like the design of the Seltos more.
Yeah, okay. Remember we drove that in, where did we drive that? Where were we at?
I don't remember, but I just
remember, were you with me when we were at that farm and
there
were ostriches?
Yeah, there was a mean ostrich that attacked everybody.
Yeah, that was a Seltos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love the little Seltos. Very similarly priced, intelligent all-wheel drive, intelligent variable transmission. I didn't know that. So I guess the base Seltos has a CVT.
It has a CVT.
Is that right?
That's why I was going to go with the Kona.
That's weird. Am I screwing something up?
I think it was a CVT. Yeah.
Maybe.
And then I think there's a dual clutch option, maybe.
Oh, wait. You know what they did? I think on the 22 Kona, they gave it a CVT for the 2.0.
Did they?
I think that's what's going on.
Anyway, let us know in the comments below. I still like the design. I still like all the features. Both Hyundai and Kia have this way of giving you a lot more for a lot less, and that's what I like about them. I also think that their quality has come up, and in the latest customer satisfaction surveys, they both rank very highly. So if you're going to go for a small all-wheel drive car, I think you can't go wrong with either the Seltos or the Kona.
They also have really good technology, too. No, I think it's a 6-speed auto. I'm sorry. This is really bugging me.
Okay.
I don't know why I'm having so much issues trying to figure out what's a CVT. I think it's a real automatic. I'm going with that. Final answer.
Okay.
I should know that off the top of my head. I'm sorry I don't. But the Seltos, I think, looks a little bit better. I also feel like it's a little bit more rugged. So I'd probably go with the Kia over the Hyundai. But they're both excellent vehicles to purchase. So moving on to another brand. Let's talk about Chevrolet.
Oh, God. Blazer?
Nope.
What's below the Blazer?
Boom. Trax.
Oh, the Trax. Yeah, the Trax.
Boom.
Yeah.
Look at that puppy.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a rebadged Korean car. You know that.
So, would you buy it?
No. I wouldn't.
Why not?
Yeah, just not my cup of tea, dude. How much is it?
Starts at 24-ish with all-wheel drive. I would actually skip the Trax altogether and get yourself a Trailblazer.
Yeah, I'd get the Trailblazer. I think if you're going to go with the Chevy, I know the name doesn't match the car because the old Trailblazer was a big old American SUV and the new one is a small crossover, but it's actually really good off-road. We took it off-road. I was surprised by how good it was off-road. That was one of those cars where I was like, dang, this thing actually has off-road capability.
Yep, so, 24-ish with all-wheel drive. You get a little baby three-cylinder, or is it a four? One of them's a 3 and one of them's a 4-cylinder. And I really like the little Trailblazer. I know it people are upset that it's got the Blazer name attached to it. But for what you get, I felt like it was a phenomenal value. Really pretty good to drive on the road. Surprisingly good off-road, like you said, especially if you get the active trim. The thing's kind of a little beast in the dirt, which is hilarious. And love it. Like, I know not a lot of people like the Trailblazer, but definitely go test drive one if you're in the market for an affordable all-wheel drive car, because it's way better than you'd initially suspect. And I think it looks pretty cool. I really like the front end with the split headlight running light design. Kind of like the Kona.
But there's more, Tommy. There's one vehicle here. All right, since we're kind of having each other guess, there's one vehicle here that we haven't talked about.
Yep.
That I would probably buy over all these vehicles that is all-wheel drive, that is brand new, that is in the same price range. The problem is, the problem with all these is getting them. But let's say if they were available at the dealership, this is probably the one I would go for. Do you know which vehicle I'm talking about?
It's the Volkswagen Taos.
No, it's not the Volkswagen Taos. Let's talk about the Taos. The Taos has this. The Taos has I like the. Okay, here's a scoop. We just drove the Taos. Here's a scoop on the Taos. Good looking vehicle. Certainly, the most spacious of all of these, I believe. I'm not going by scientific, but out of my butt-o-meter, it was incredibly roomy, like the next size up roomy. Except that like the transmission and the engine are like me and you bickering at our worst. They do not get along. And in fact, they do not get along to such an extent that it makes it almost tricky to drive.
Yep, but it is a turbo.
It is a turbo, but like the two don't seem to talk to each other. Like the turbo lag is horrendous, almost going back to like the Saab days, the bad old Saab days, where you would like actually count to like 1-1000, 2-1000, 3-1000, and then somewhere between 3 and 4-1000, the turbo would kick in.
Yeah,
like you're merging onto the highway, you floor it, and you're like, oh my god, there's a semi coming up. Where's that semi? It's right in my boom. There it goes.
So 4Motion with the 1.5 and the 7-speed DSG, which is a trans. You're talking about $26,235. But what's the car that you wanted to mention that I interrupted you?
Well,
about?
You said the wrong word.
What?
You said car.
What is it?
There's a vehicle that's not a car.
Oh, the Maverick.
Exactly.
Oh, that's an interesting one.
Yeah, why don't you go to that one? Because I think that would be the one that I would pick at this moment. Mm. I think the hybrid starts at $19,000, right? It's the cheapest hybrid in America. But if you add four-wheel drive to a base Maverick, I think you're looking at like $23,000, if I remember
right. That's true. And it's a pick-em-up truck.
Yeah, FX4, yeah.
2-liter EcoBoost. So, and then you have to spec all-wheel drive, you're right. I do like the Maverick. That is an interesting choice. They really kind of changed the game with this Maverick. How they were able to get it so affordable is pretty awesome, I do have to say.
Yeah, so if it were my money, I would definitely go for the Maverick over all of those, just because I think you're going to get not only a big cabin, but of course the utility of a pickup truck. And Ford does good pickup trucks. As much as I hate the EcoSport, this one is certainly one of their star vehicles right now.
True that.
And yep. So you could get all-wheel drive, you can get the utility of a pickup truck, and you could get something that nobody else has on your block because they're brand new for like $23,000. If it wasn't for, of course, let's call it the interesting dealer tactics where they're adding on. We just had a guy who emailed us who was looking at a Maverick, and the dealer added up a $3,000 market adjustment. Once again, I'm using air quotes here because, that's the way it is right now.
That's a good point. I didn't even consider that because it's not a car, but that is probably one of the best values out there.
And by the way, if you guys want to send us pictures of cars that are at a market adjustment, we'll be happy to put them over on TFL Car or TFL Truck and, let people know which dealers are market adjusting them and which aren't. I think that's a community service we could certainly provide because, we want to help you as much as possible, and it's good to know which dealers are playing dealer shenanigans at this time and which aren't. I think that's a fair thing. So you're over at the Mazda side. What about the Mazda?
Yep, this would be my choice all the way if I was looking for a brand new, affordable, small crossover, the CX-30. So starts, low 20s with all-wheel drive are going to be at, around 24 grand. But I think that it is one of the best driving cars in its class. The interior is phenomenal. The exterior design is beautiful and elegant, and I just love the CX-30. Even though in this price point you're not getting the turbo, it still is a great thing to drive. It drives like almost like a sporty hatchback.
Yeah, Mazda's always the answer if you're an enthusiast.
Oh, it's just great. I really like once again, the infotainment system is not my favorite. I actually think it's pretty hard to use. But
from a quality and a driving perspective.
Yeah, it's just great. Yeah. They really do a good
style
job.
Perspective. Yeah. How much is it though? You always pay a premium.
24. 625.
That's not bad, yeah.
Yeah, 24.
It's a little tight.
It's a little small, but
it's a little small.
It's not a CX-3. This is a CX-30. Keep that in mind too.
Right, but it's still a little small.
So I think that the Mazda would probably be my choice. So would you get the Ford? Is that your final answer?
I get the Maverick, yeah.
Oh, that is an interesting one. I do think that the Maverick is a very cool little trucklet, and I would consider that as well. But I think just because of the way the Mazda looks and drives, that is going to be my choice.
Now, we didn't, of course, go into like the Germans, except for Volkswagen, because they're much more expensive. So if you're looking at premium ones, then you're probably in the wrong segment.
There's some other weird ones we didn't talk about too. So like we focus mainly on crossovers because that's what's really selling and popular. But you can get all-wheel drive now, like in a Camry.
Yeah.
You can get all-wheel drive in an Altima.
You can get all-wheel drive in a Prius.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm looking at right here. Check this out, the Prius 2022. It's a very interesting all-wheel drive system because
that's a good way of putting it.
What do you mean?
Interesting always means anything but interesting.
It is an interesting all-wheel drive system.
It only works, like, it only sends, like, what, 15 horsepower to the rear wheels or something?
Look, there's a picture of it in Moab.
Yeah, uh-huh. Doesn't it only 15 horsepower to the rear wheels?
It might even be less than that. I think it's 10.
Yeah.
It only activates from, like, 0 to 45 miles an hour. But it does mean that you can take your Prius into harsher environments that you couldn't before. Because on paper, it's not a very impressive all-wheel drive. I'll grant you that. I think it's actually 7, if I remember right. It's a 7-horsepower rear-mounted electric motor that powers the rear axle. But it's enough to get you unstuck out of, like, a snowbank. It's enough to help you propel yourselves up the steepest, iciest kind of hills in your towns. So $27,145. Electronic on-demand all-wheel drive. Certainly incredibly fuel-efficient. 51 city, 47 highway. Pretty good.
You know, this segment is exploding right now. And what was the first car in the segment that we tested now? Like, maybe it was almost like 8 or 9 years ago.
In the all-wheel drive hybrid segment?
In the all-wheel drive small crossover segment.
Oh, the SX4.
Exactly.
Suzuki.
Very good. Yeah, that was the very first car. And ever since I tested that, which actually had a locking center diff, or at least had a locking center diff button, I've always thought it'd be fun to buy one. And we went and looked at one, actually, and then we drove it, and it was just a really boring little car to drive. But it certainly heralded the way for all of these vehicles.
Maybe we should buy an all-wheel drive Prius and put one of those lift kits on it. Now, there's an idea.
Yeah, that's certainly an idea.
What a great idea, huh?
How about a base Countryman? Is that too expensive? That's going to be like 30K,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's going to be like probably low 30s.
Yeah, you're not going to even come close to...
Well, we forgot the, how about this one?
Okay, what do we forget in our last few minutes before we say adieu? Yeah, I didn't forget it.
The Fiat 500X?
Yeah, I didn't forget it. I think the market forgot it, but I didn't forget it. It's fine. It's like, it's basically a Renegade. I mean, if you want an Italian Renegade, get the 500X. Don't get the L. Run far and run fast, but that's only front wheel drive.
I don't know if they still make the L.
I don't know if you can
I think it's just 500X and 124.
Are there even Fiat dealerships left? I mean, how many cars are they selling now? 3?
Not many.
Yeah, there's the...
yeah, not many.
If you want to get a Fiat... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, the Abarth obviously is a lot of fun. The 124, is that still... I think they stopped selling that now.
No, it's still on the website. I don't know if it's discontinued, but it's still on the website.
Yeah, it's a brand that's certainly struggling.
Certainly struggling. Yep, yeah. That's right, Dad. All right.
Well, there you have it, guys. If we've forgotten something that maybe, you know, you want to put on your list, I know I've picked one pickup truck. I don't think there's any other mid-sized trucks you can get for that cheap that are four-wheel
no,
drive.
No, not low 20s.
No, you're probably looking at high 20s at some point if you get a new Frontier or Ranger or any of those.
Yep,
certainly
you're right.
You won't touch a Tacoma for that. Let us know in the comments below. And as always, if you want to get all of our videos, podcasts, and news, go to tfl-studios.com, where we have everything. You can add it to your phone like I did. Thank you to our friends at Onyx Off-Road, where you can get really great maps. We get emails all the time, people asking us, we just got one this weekend, where do I go off-roading?
Yep, check out Onyx. It's got all the trails listed out.
And they're rated.
easy to use. Yeah, they have a team that goes through and rates them all. So pretty cool stuff. It's very consistent as well. But we'll see you guys next time on another episode of TFL Talk.
Yep, see you next time. Ciao.
Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt. A classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.